In association with Newsarama, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Sutris. Today, a discussion with Eisner-nominated artist Dean Haspiel. You may know Dean from his many collaborations with Harvey Pekar on his series American Splendor and their original graphic novel, The Quitter. But he's also had his share of mainstream hero stories, like a new X-Men first class story for their Halloween issue coming up with writer Jeff Parker. Dean is up for Billy Dogma Immortal in the Best Digital Comic Eisner Award category. He's also in the middle of a few other projects digitally, like a new Billy Dogma story that's up at his site Activate called Fear My Dear. Plus, at Zuta Comics' website, Dean has just started his series Street Code. At Smith Magazine, Haspiel contributes and edits a new series called Next Door Neighbor Stories, with contributions from people like Harvey Pekar, Rick Veitch, and Jonathan Ames. In September, Dean and Jonathan Ames released their original graphic novel, The Alcoholic, from Vertigo. And he's in the middle of a children's project, Mo and Joe Fighting Together, a collaboration with writer and underground comic legend Jay Lynch for Raw Junior's Toon Books. We'll be talking about all those and just in general the world of digital comics and the innovations that lie ahead. Well, Dean, first of all, I want to congratulate you on the Eisner nomination for Billy Dogma, Immortal. And it's
Thank
great.
Very much.
It's great that you know the Eisners are recognizing that, and I'm glad to see that the new story is up and running at Activate as well.
First of all, it is awesome that the Eisners are recognizing webcomics, because for a while there, you know, it's a new form. It's a new thing that people are trying out. I also get that a lot of people just want to, you know, read their comic in print. You know, I get
sure.
that, and in a lot of ways, I prefer that too. With any new format, what folks try to do, at least with webcomics, is try to show why it needs to be a webcomic. My comics don't necessarily need to be a webcomic. I am playing around a little bit with the form by doing like the square panel click-through type thing, but that's also because I was thinking about how they might appear like on an iPhone or any future format where when you hold something in your palm, you know, that's obviously you're dealing with a smaller size. So I am playing a little bit with the format of webcomics, but like I was saying before about the Eisners recognizing it, I think that's really cool that they're doing it. And just like the deluge of comics that come out in print, you know, obviously that the slog through a lot of that stuff that happens online. I think with print, there's a little bit more scrutinizing because you actually have to pay a bill, you know. But on the internet, you know, anyone and their mom can do a comic, and sometimes that's not the best thing to do, you know.
Sure.
But, you know, I still think it's, you know, in a lot of ways, webcomics are the new mini-comic in that folks who are trying out comics and trying to make stories and write and draw, they're using this format right now because it is cheap, free, easy, you get to control it. Now that the blog culture is even more prevalent, you know, comics blogging is going to happen more so. And, you know, I think that is something that needs to be recognized and heard, or seen, at least. So, yeah, that was really cool. And then, when we decided to put Billy Dogma in print again via the three-issue black and white miniseries Brawl that came out from Image Comics last fall, I wanted to test the waters with that character being in print, because he'd only been online for 2 years after going on a hiatus from you know, the late 90s to early aughts. And then I kind of put him, Billy Dogma, to the side for a little while. And then we got to test those waters a little bit again in print just to see would anybody respond. And, you know, we broke even. Basically, I think I made a little bit of a profit, but that wasn't the point. The point was to get it out there. And it was not even, and it was more in a beta version in print in that it came out in black and white, not in color. So, you know, I'm looking forward to finishing the Billy Dogma trilogy, which is what I'm working on part two of right now in Fear My Dear on Activate.
Okay.
And once that is, done, finished, the whole story, which will probably be done in like 2010, then I could put it out in its master form in color. And, you know, I've talked to a couple of publishers that are interested in that. And, you know, we'll see where it goes. But that's the plan for Billy Dogma right now, is just to do it weekly, experiment with the form, tell my story and write it, you know, as it comes along, and then work on other projects with publishers that actually pay a page rate.
You were telling me before we started that you've got an X-Men First Class story coming up this fall.
Yes, I'm right now, right before you called and after I get off the phone with you, I'm working on a six-page X-Men First Class story written by Jeff Parker for the Halloween issue, I guess coming out in October. And I think each story is going to kind of make fun of like a famous horror film or something like that, or kind of, you know, take a nod toward them. And
that's cool.
And Jeff wrote me and he's like, hey, you want to do one of these? I was like, hell yeah. And he asked me, well, what are your favorite horror films? And one of the ones I picked was The Thing. And not only because I love The Thing and The Fantastic Four, which is a very different, you know, concept, character, but it's just one of my favorite horror films, especially John Carpenter's The Thing.
That's
so
cool.
Anyway, we're doing a little six-page nod toward The Thing, and it's a lot of fun, and obviously steered toward young adults, so it's not going to be too scary. It'll be fun, and that's what I'm working on right now.
Well, your style fits, too, that first year of Marvel and these kind of first-year stories that Marvel is kind of experimenting with in X-Men
right.
First Class. And I know Jeff has a lot of, you know, respect for the you know, what's come before, but also,
yeah.
We you know, the mutants are pretty oversaturated, and yet it's kind of a fresh perspective that is good for an entry point for young readers, but also very entertaining for jaded people like us in our 40s that,
yes.
You know, can appreciate, you know, the kind of stories that Jeff is writing. So I think that's awesome.
Well, I have a studio mate, Mike Cavallaro, who did a book called Parade with Fireworks. He did that for Activate, as well as his current book Leviathan, or his current webcomic Leviathan, and he made a really good observation about a lot of the current Marvel comics. Seems to be like big Hollywood productions, these stories. Like, I could never draw like most of the guys are drawing right now for Marvel. They really just have a whole different way of approaching the page and all. It's like almost like shock and awe, a lot of the artwork. And, you know, I look at what I do, or, you know, like you brought up, the young adult type stuff that Marvel is publishing via, like, X-Men First Class, or, you know, the stuff that Jeff Parker's writing. And that's the stuff that I know. That's the stuff I grew up on. And to me, that's still what I expect from a comic book. And you know, I pick up a lot of that the new stuff as well. I'm not an old fogey.
Sure.
But I do look at what I can contribute versus what's kind of popular right now. And I sometimes scratch my head and I wonder, like, you know, I guess it's a new kind of entry point for the new reader to expect this level of artwork and, you know, and these stories that expand like forever. I mean, I remember, and I'm sure you remember, you could pick up a 22-page comic and you get a whole story.
Sometimes two stories.
Yeah, sometimes two stories. True.
You know.
And nowadays, you got to read six issues to get that 22-page story.
Yep.
But you know, times have changed, and you know, comic book pamphlets, I think, are probably harder to sell at $3 a pop than they were when they were 25 cents and 35 cents a pop, you know?
Yeah, well,
times have changed, you know, like now that with the video games and you can be the hero, or the movies have gotten so excellent in terms of being able to capture a lot of what, you know, a lot of people were drawing and could do on the page, at least create the verisimilitude of what that, you know, you could do on the page. I think that a lot of people just are, you know, I hate to use the word lazy, but there's a certain passive experience when you can just sit there and the information can be delivered to you like that.
Absolutely.
In a seamless, you know, fashion.
Sure.
You still got to work at comics, and that's what I love about comics, is that even at age 41, I still go to the comic shop every Wednesday, and yeah, I can pick up something that still kind of challenges me as a reader.
Well, and now you're being challenged as a creator, because you were telling me how writing for this digital format and doing things, your thought process in terms of how to compose these stories has obviously changed. I mean, these are each page is a single panel versus,
right.
You know, a page of multi-panels in a given pamphlet-style book.
Right. Well, I was telling you before, I think, is that what I was trying to do with at least my contributions to Activate with these Billy Dogma stories is to not know what happens next and to kind of keep it fresh as a creator. And what I mean by that is often I collaborate where I'm the artist and I'm working with a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And when I get the project, I know from beginning to end what the story is, and then it's my job to figure out how to show that entire story. So there's one challenge there, which is really cool, which is, you know, okay, let me try to make all this work. And what I like doing with Billy Dogma is to not know what's going to happen next week. And that was most of what my experience creating Immortal was like, which was, hell, I was almost like a reader myself in a weird way, to the point where when I would post an episode and I would get a bunch of responses, sometimes the responses actually steered which direction I was going to go in. Not for popularity reasons, but more because there was a lot of smart readers reading my comic, giving me good ideas. And I also realized that in working on a project that, let's say, took me a year for it to unfold, I also let all my influences of that year, whether it be movies, books, you know, going in a kayak around the lake and looking up the moon or something. I mean, who knows? You know, real life, conversations, you know, the news, anything that could make an impact on me would then go into the making of this story as it unfolded live, if that makes any sense. So I really appreciated having that experiment, and in hindsight, seeing that that's what was happening. Because on the one hand, I decided, let me just try this and not see what happens. But I didn't know it was going to be this fruitful for me. So yeah, I mean, working on webcomics, or at least my webcomics, that's been my own personal experiment, and I think it's been very successful in certain ways, narratively, you know, and in creation.
That's great. You know, Immortal, I really sucked me in, and it was your wild ideas with each turn in that story. And Fear My Deer is doing the same thing. I think, chapter one was an experience in itself as Billy kind of faces his father and discovers the eighth deadly sin.
Yes, love.
Yes.
I was sitting there one day, and I was like, man, like, and I try not to use, I'm not biblical or anything like that. But, you know, seven deadly sins is kind of cool. You know?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
I was thinking, what could be the eighth deadly sin? And because, you know, a lot of the themes that I tackle have to do with romance and love and loyalty, I was like, damn, that's it. That's got to be it. Because we get into so much trouble because of how we love, who we love, when we love. Like, my God, it's like it almost encompasses the other seven deadly sins into one.
Sure.
You know? So that's why I kind of threw it out there, because it's a fun idea. And now I'm exploring it. And, you know, like anything that's really, really good, there's no answer. You know? I swear, they start to answer all the questions that Lost, you know, throws out. I'm going to get a little pissed off. I got it.
You wanted to stay ambiguous, son. That's interesting.
Yeah, there's got to be some stuff that's illegal, because that's what life is.
Sure.
Life can be really ambiguous, and we all want the answers, but then do you ever really feel satisfied by an answer? Not often, no.
No, I don't think anyone, you know, leaves the mortal coil knowing it all. And,
right,
you know,
exactly.
So I can appreciate that. Well, the great thing about this story, just like Immortal as well, interesting action, great scenes, you know, and definitely taking advantage of the fact that it is the internet. So it's it's an adult story, but that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun. I mean, I think it's the best of both worlds. I think I see your mainstream influences there, but I also see the alt side as well, and it's it makes for entertaining reading. So I'm enjoying it. Well, and that's cool, man. I mean, you guys have been doing this at Activate for 2 years now, and it's digital comics, as you say, it's kind of the new thing, and it's creating this community, as we talked about before we started rolling here.
It creates a community, because we are lifting the veil between creation and creator, and now that's just a standard. You know, before, you could read an interview in a magazine. Now you can actually email the guy that you like, or, you know, or
yes.
hate, you know?
Absolutely.
And you can have this dialogue, and it's a very spirited thing that's happening, because it does influence, believe it or not, as much as you want to not admit it, you know, we all influence each other in some way. And that's what's happening now, is it's becoming, you know, creation is becoming more global in a lot of ways. And maybe this is kind of like the mind space that you know, other people had to take drugs in order to access. Maybe, you know, you just have to, you know, jump onto your phone line and type, you know, or to show off, to access that mind space that a lot of creators have talked about in the past. I mean, I think even Alan Moore, who's kind of famous for I don't even know what he called it, but he, like, white magic or something like that.
Yeah, I know what you mean, though, that kind of where these thoughts and ideas kind of come from and everything.
Right, and he kind of, you know, put a label on it, and I don't know if he really can or if he, you know, can really say that's what it was. And it's cool to identify something, but, you know, I think that's what we're all being made more available to accessing information, culture, putting things out there and experimenting. If something doesn't work, then you try something else. It's okay.
And it's a shared experience. It's becoming
it's
more
a shared experience.
Yeah.
Exactly.
No, I'm with you. Did you see that Moore documentary where he kind of tried to articulate that?
I haven't seen the Moore documentary. I want to. He's such a fascinating guy. Even down to, I don't know if you saw the Steve Ditko, In Search of Steve Ditko
documentary. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Where
he
showed up. I mean, he just commands time and space wherever he is. That's really cool.
No question.
But speaking of the shared experience, like, that's why, you know, this whole concept of giving something away for free, you know, first of all, we don't own anything, number one. Number two, it's not free, because as you're sharing it, I'm making something and giving it to you so you can respond back to me. So I'm getting something back. It may not, you know, pay my rent, and my landlord may not, you know, I can't bamboozle my landlord with a bunch of, like, you know, comments from my blog, you know, to pay my rent.
Sure.
But ultimately that will turn into something. And I have a mantra right now, which is, if it's good, it will sell. And I don't mean that everything should turn into some monetary, you know, reward. But I get a lot of riches just from people actually responding to the work. You know, the page rate allows me to sit at my desk and sit there and create these things. But when it comes to, like, the community, the communal aspect, that's much, much more, you know, that's gold. That's diamond and gold right there.
Absolutely.
For a creator. And then what happens is that you then engender this loyalty, this fan base, have this parlay, this dialogue with this community, so that eventually you can make it into a nice packaged thing that can be sold, bought, and then taken and shared in different formats. I'm sure that in the future, everyone will have somehow consolidated everything they've ever owned into one big black box, like the monolith in 2001. But, you know, that's no fun.
Sure.
I have too many things. I'm sure you probably have too many things yourself. But there's something about walking into someone's house and saying, oh, I saw that movie, or oh, I read that book, or oh, I heard about that. Can I see that? You know, when you put everything onto your little, like, iPod or, you know, I don't know. I'm still having an issue with doing that. You know, and I know that all you have to do is turn it on and flip through it. But to me, there's still something about the idea of a shelf and what the shelf represents.
I can appreciate that. I think you're right, though, that our generation is the generation that is more appreciative and is willing to change and accept the new ways of gathering information. And I do, you know, I should say for our audience, Dean and I are going to probably make a lot of references to a conversation that unfortunately got lost through a hiccup on my computer. So we're covering some old ground as we're covering new ground, discussing a lot of his work. But one thing that we talked about was that it is this new distribution of digital comics that it's creating a different way of getting this information. As you said, you don't want to cut out the middleman because there are good things about having a publisher at times, but there's also a lot of good where more power is coming to the creator and you are getting this direct link to your audience. And it's I think, making it a much more liberating experience for creative content providers. And also, you know, it's also giving you guys more power to really do things the way that you want to do them and not have to worry about satisfying a middleman to get something published.
And it's also allowing creators to be more innovative. And I don't mean necessarily with their creations, but with how they, you know, not only deliver their creations and their content, but, you know, market it, if that's a word we can use here, because I'm no marketing genius. But, you know, when you show up to something, that's half the battle, you know?
Absolutely.
There's enough people I know that are like, how come you get this and you get that? I was like, because I'm showing up, man. You know, it's not because someone's knocking on my door. Because I'm knocking on doors, you know?
Absolutely.
And I'm showing up at these communities, and I'm like, you know, sometimes you got to spend, like, more, like, a half hour or an hour looking at other people's stuff and seeing what other things are happening. You know, once I've, quote, figured it out, I'm dead. There is no figuring it out. You got to still show up because things change all the time. What doesn't change necessarily are our needs. We want to be entertained. We want to smile. We want to learn stuff. I don't know if you ever saw a movie called Sullivan's Travels.
Sure, absolutely.
I finally saw that movie after all these years. In fact, I thought I saw it as a kid. I may have, and I just didn't remember it.
Preston Sturges, Joel McRae movie.
Yep. Genius. The whole point of the story is that this guy is going to go on a journey, this famous actor and this, or movie producer or whatever, is going to go on this journey because he wants to find out about what the real man, how the real man lives and what they really want.
Yep.
And his own butler warns him at the beginning of the movie, you cannot do this. He's like, what are you talking about? He's like, you don't want to see reality because it's too painful. And nobody wants reality when they go to their movie. And this guy spends the entire movie, you know, there's hijinks, there's drama, there's all this stuff. And finally, he, through a series of events, winds up in, like, a chain gang and has to, like, break rocks for a week. And then what do they get on a Sunday? They're allowed for 2 hours to watch a movie in a church. And what's the movie? It's cartoons. And I'm not making, like, a comics kind of equivalent here. The point is, he's sitting there watching these guys laugh. They didn't laugh once the entire week because life is hard. And, you know, yes, he's in a chain gang, so they're probably not going to, like, be too happy anyway. But the point is, what he walks away with is he realizes nobody wants reality. They want to escape. They want to get away from... I mean, look at the war movies that came out the last bunch of years. They're tanking, even if they're good, because nobody wants to go watch a war movie right now.
No, absolutely. You know? No, you're 100% correct, and I've noticed the same thing. It's not that they're bad movies. It's just
right. Everyone
wants to get away from the reality of what's going on right now.
Yeah, because they put on the TV, they see this war.
Hell yes.
And you know what? They're like, oh my God, what's happening here? Let me go see Wall-E, or, you know, I don't know. I mean, Dark Knight's awesome. I saw that recently, and I was very surprised because that is a dark movie.
Yes.
It's almost a horror film. And it's epic because it tells a huge story and it tells it well, even remove the fact that these are crazy people that dress up in costumes. You know, have you seen it?
Yes, I did. It was excellent. It was incredible.
It's intense.
It is intense. It's very dark. It's the Batman movie that I think a lot of fans have wanted a long time. And it's interesting to see the backlash from critics who... The things they don't like about it are the very things that I think fanboys wanted from a Batman movie. The fact that it is so realistic, it is dark, it is a serious crime movie rather than, you know, the Adam West experience. And I think maybe some people were expecting just a little bit more humor. And it's like, there's no room for humor in that story.
No,
sorry.
It's not a funny movie.
No, it is, definitely not.
It's really dark. And, yeah, I don't want to give away too much on this podcast, but, yeah, we could talk about it creates a really interesting dialogue with people who've seen it. I think they hit it out of the ballpark. In fact, I think it could have been longer because it's obvious that in order to get it down to 2.5 hours, they had to do some choppy editing on some of the action because all the characterization is there.
Definitely.
It's a little like, whoa, what's happening, you know, type thing. Even, you know, for veteran superhero fans like me, I was even like, whoa, hold on, like... Give me a little more time to watch this thing happening, you know. But anyway.
I wanted to talk about The Alcoholic.
Yes.
And I'm excited about that. It's coming out in September from Vertigo?
It's going to come out in September from Vertigo. And I think we're doing some local New York City signings for it. I don't know what else is planned, but I'm just excited that the book's going to come out. And I'm really interested in how the bookstore market is going to deal with it because, first of all, it's a heady subject.
Yes.
It's called The Alcoholic. And again, I don't want to give too much away in the story, but, you know, Jonathan Ames has his own fan base and has discussed alcoholism in his own stories. And as you pointed out to me earlier, when you have, I mean, you investigated him and heard a podcast. I mean, he's a very funny guy.
He absolutely. So, I mean, it's harsh. It's harsh material, but
right.
But he's a wonderful storyteller, and it's he's, yeah, I mean, I'm really looking forward to this combination of the two of you guys. And if I may, here's an idea, and maybe you guys have already thought about it. I'd love to see him do a spoken word, you know, tell narration of maybe one of the stories with your art, you know, flowing in the background or something like that.
Oh, that'd be kind of cool, yeah, yeah. No, I mean, what's cool about the book is I encouraged him to finally sit down and write a graphic novel because I wanted to collaborate with him ever since I met him. I had read his work before I met him, so I was already a fan when I met him. And then, you know, over the years, as we hung out and became much friendlier to the point where I considered him one of my best friends, I kind of turned him on to comics. I obviously gave him my comics. He was very encouraging. I mean, he's a Renaissance guy. He doesn't just write. He performs. He puts together variety shows. He's a producer, an actor. He's got a lot coming up in 2009, even, with television and movies. That I don't know how much I can announce. I know he's doing something with HBO.
I heard about that, yeah.
Yeah, and he's going to be working with some big names in film as well.
That's great.
He's got a lot going on in his plate right now, and again, he's also tackling stuff like with The Alcoholic that he had never tackled format-wise. And he knocked it out of the ballpark. When he handed that script, my God, like, he knew how to break down a page, he knew pacing. I mean, he's just a really phenomenal, as you said, storyteller. He's a great storyteller.
It sounded like,
and he gave, huh?
I was just going to say, it sounded like you turned him on to the right comic books in terms of how to approach the format. Guys like Brian K. Vaughan.
Yeah.
You tell me the comics that you turned him on to kind of prepare him.
Why
for
The Last Man? Because we had originally envisioned this as a 6-issue series, and I wanted to get, you know, with the idea of cliffhangers and how that works. And I know Brian writes a really great cliffhanger in a lot of his comics. Also gave him Fun Home, because it was memoir, and this is semi-autobiographical, The Alcoholic, but, you know, he was going to be tapping into a lot of what he knows to tackle this subject about alcoholism.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, bookstores, you know, there's going to be a title, you know, and how dare a comic book be called The Alcoholic, I assume, but, you know, comics can cover everything, which is why I love this medium, you know, and I think this is only going to help prove that.
Well, it's cool that Vertigo is moving towards this direction too of you know, this, and I forget the rapper's name that did his autobiography.
Oh, yes. Percy Carey.
Thank you. Yes, exactly.
Him? Yeah, no, it's really great that Vertigo has put their money where their mouth is. You know, like, yes, sure. You know, Neil Gaiman, Sandman, Preacher, 100 Bullets. They do a lot of really cool stuff with what I consider to be like second tier genre.
Sure.
And they really ace it, you know, and I love a lot of the books. I mean, DMZ, that kind of stuff. But I also think it's really cool that, you know, at least with graphic novels, and what's Incognito?
Yes.
Was a great read.
Absolutely. I love
that. And, you know, they're taking little risks, more because maybe the Batman, Superman, Spider-Man fan might not pick up like an Incognito or an Alcoholic or even Picard's The Quitter. But that's not the entire audience that buys and reads comics either. You know?
Or books for that matter. I mean, and then,
or
more importantly.
Books, exactly. And that's another thing. You know, I mean, somebody should start an ad campaign. Maybe comics aren't just for comics readers anymore. You know, honestly.
I'm with
you. And I think that that's what's starting to happen right now with the popularity of the, quote, graphic novel, you know?
Definitely.
And you know, I think it's really smart of Karen Berger and company to decide, you know what, we are going to commit to this. And just recently, they've taken two of their editors to focus on getting materials like The Alcoholic and other, you know, memoir-esque and, you know, literary-type comic books to create those.
I was at that panel in New York, and it sounds like, I mean, this is Vertigo 3.0. I mean, it's
a great way of putting it.
You know, it really is. It's the next innovation from Vertigo, and Vertigo has kind of become, in comic book circles, when you want to describe a type of story, Vertigo was kind of becoming pigeonholed, as you say. Great works, wonderful
right.
works like 100 Bullets and DMZ and,
right.
and Preacher and all the Neil Gaiman stuff. But yeah, it was time to reinvent themselves without getting rid of that stuff, but again, innovating to the next level. And
right.
and that's, you know, that's Karen Berger, and I give her a lot of credit, and I think that's awesome. I'm glad you're a part of it, man.
No, and I'm glad too. And you know, I didn't realize that Karen's been around for a while.
Yeah,
she's had to see. Look at the changes she's seen in comics as a woman.
Indeed,
in comics.
Absolutely,
it's amazing, and I really gotta applaud her for sticking around, not pulling her hair out, and seeing it through. And I think it's really cool that Vertigo is becoming synonymous with change.
Yep.
Which is cool because Vertigo, has a corporation they have to answer to as well. I only have to answer to me when I work on like Billy Dogma. I it must be really hard. Imagine the ideas that didn't make it to print.
No question.
For a lot of companies,
No question. And I think both Levitz and probably Karen Berger now, because it seems like Vertigo is a lot more autonomous than it maybe once was. Mm-hmm. But I think they kind of knew how to push the right corporate buttons at Warner Brothers and say, look,
right.
Let us be in our little corner and give you the type of material you're not getting from Random House or and I don't even know the other legitimate novel, arms of Warner Brothers. But, so maybe that's what's going on. And I think that's fantastic. And they're given their own little laboratories to kind of experiment and, do their own thing. That's
exactly.
Great.
It is like a laboratory that affords a page rate, and they are playing around with stuff. And, and thankfully they have a Batman. And they do have the biggest movie probably of all time right now because it will afford folks like me to be able to sell my idea Street Code to Zuda, which, speaking of Paul Levitz is on top of that. He knows what's up with Zuda. I spoke to him.
That's cool.
He didn't just tell, he didn't hand it a memo and they say, this is what Zuda is. He actually knows what time it is.
That's cool.
And again, there's a guy that's been around for a while and seen so many changes,
Talk about Street Code for a second. That's a good opportunity to get into that.
Okay, well, Street Code, listen, when I heard about Zuda happening, and it wasn't behind-the-scenes stuff, I literally saw it, I think the same day that everyone else saw it on Newsarama. And I was like, wow, that's really cool. And to use an old, probably inappropriate term, I kind of felt like Activate was Macy's to Zuda's Gimbals.
Okay. Sure. No, I can appreciate that.
I had to
that.
Give him a high five and say, bet, this is cool. I don't exactly know what it is right now. Nobody did. And I kind of started a dialogue with Kwanzaa and Ron Peraza.
Okay.
And they were like, hey, what's up? And I opened the door and said, listen, if there's anything I might know about what I've been doing for the last year and a half with Activate, I'd love to share it because, this isn't about this isn't poker. I'm not hiding my cards. This is about let's make webcomics work.
Let's learn from each other. Absolutely.
So I threw out a bunch of emails like that, then got the opportunity to meet them. And I was like, listen, I'd love to do something for Zuda. I'm not going to do the competition thing. But, and that's a really cool idea in certain ways. But I wasn't up for that because I got too many things I'm juggling. Plus, I'd rather know off the bat that I'm doing something for a company,
Sure.
And they were like, please, send us something, pitch us something. So I pitched three things. And they actually picked the one thing that I didn't think they were going to pick at all. And that was Street Code. Which basically is, I used to do a comic with my friend Josh Neufeld called Keyhole.
Yes.
And in Keyhole, I tackled different subjects like Billy Dogma, crime, horror, and semi-autobiographical comics.
Definitely.
And then I did a bunch of those, which became a collection called Opposable Thumbs for alternative comics, which was actually the first Eisner recognition I got, which was for, talent deserving wider recognition type thing. So anyway, I started to call together a bunch of stories that would have been for Opposable Thumbs number 2. And then I had had a moment of clarity where I realized, wow, I feel that when I write autobiocomics or semi-autobiocomics, I feel like the reader is a voyeur, and I'm just a journalist. And I discovered that I was probably being more emotionally true in my Billy Dogma comics, and I decided to tackle that, even though there's a lot of fiction in it,
Sure.
I'm not super powered.
Sure.
Like Billy Dogma and Jane Legit. A lot of things that occur in Billy Dogma stories have not occurred to me proper, but they were more emotionally true, those stories, than anything I had written in my semi-autobiocomics. So anyway, I kind of decided to put that stuff to the side and figured I'd never draw those stories. And then when I started to blog, I started a blog, which then led to Activate. I started writing about my life. So I had all this other kind of sketch material, as it were, to call from. And suddenly I had another property idea, Street Code, which, like I said, I was surprised that Zuda bought, because I was like, wow, there's nothing. I think they might have gotten one or two kind of semi-autobio stuff up online at their site, but they weren't really, you know, focusing on that, I guess.
Okay.
I decided, okay, let me put a season together, as it were. The one thing I discovered is I had to actually change my name and, like, put, like, a scar over my forehead and cheek, at least the character that represents me, because, you know, they, part of the deal is that, you know, they're in cahoots with ownership type thing about
it. Oh, so your likeness might become an action figure or something.
Yeah, I could become an action figure, you know, and, like, and then they would have to own my future life stories. I was like, I haven't even lived them yet, you know, so.
I can appreciate that.
You know, and so we settled on the fact that I was just going to call the guy Jack and throw a scar in his face so it's not me. You know, and hopefully okay. that won't happen to me. but, yeah, so basically what I discovered in looking at these stories I had here was I was writing about a transitional period in my life when I moved from Manhattan to Brooklyn. And as a Manhattanite, you know, we have a certain swagger and attitude about what we think we know.
Okay.
And about the city streets and how people behave and everything. And I realized that when I moved to Brooklyn, I knew nothing. And I moved to Brooklyn, I think, when I was 30. And I thought I knew everything. And then I come to this new old Italian neighborhood, and I suddenly face a whole new strain of street logic about how things function, work, behave, your rights. And I started writing these stories that were really compelling to me. And I guess it interested the folks at Zuda as well. So, you know, that's what I'm going to be telling here, these little anecdotal stories about, you know, not only human interaction, but the behavior and what, you know, what to expect and what we actually don't know about each other that we think we know about each other.
That's very cool. I enjoyed
it's kind of anthropological, you know?
Well, it just started on the 18th, and as of our recording, 8 pages are up of it. And I don't know how often. Is it weekly that you're going to be...
What I plan to do is to go, it'll be biweekly, every 2 weeks.
Okay.
No less than 4 screens, but no more than 8 screens per biweekly, you know, volley episode.
Okay. Very
so,
cool.
So, part 2 of this first story, which is called Awful George, will be up, not this Friday, but next Friday.
Okay.
And I'll have a, done-in-one story following that. And then another, like, 3-part story after that. I mean, I have it all written out. I just have to draw them. And then I also, I might take a little break to work on a project, and I've already discussed it with the editors. And then, well, what I have is I have a way to end the first season that kind of changes everything. And then I have ideas for another season if I decide to do more and if they decide they want me to do more. And we'll see what happens when that occurs.
Now I want to ask you about the stuff that's going on in Smith. Because Next Door Neighbor, because that was great, man. And I know you're editing and also contributing to Next Door Neighbor. And there's a feeling of, you know, it's a lot like Street Code in terms of, you know, there's some similarities. Obviously, specifically, these are anecdotes about Next Door Neighbors. And you got funny people contributing to this as well. Jonathan Ames and Harvey Pekar. And I had it up. Let me see if I can find it. Because it was Steve. It was Kevin. It was Kevin Colden.
Kevin
Colden's story was the one that I related to as far as my experiences.
that's cool because I reached out to a bunch of folks, obviously friends first because I know a lot of talented people, and I also figured I could basically get them for free.
Okay.
To do a little short story for this idea I had. I was sitting around one day and I realized I've written a bunch of Next Door Neighbor stories. I always hear about next door neighbor stories. Everyone talks about their next door neighbors. And I was like, is there not a next door neighbor anthology? And I looked it up and there wasn't. I was like, this seems to be such a no brainer because everyone has a next door neighbor, no matter how far away they are. Everyone probably has a story.
Yep.
So I was like, wait a second. This would make a nice little anthology. And Dan Goldman, did Shooting War with Anthony LaPay at Smith Magazine. And then my really good buddy Josh Ufeld is currently doing AD, New Orleans After the Deluge, about Katrina.
Yes.
And that's phenomenal.
Yes.
And that just got a book deal. Again, these are two, Shooting War and AD, both online first, and got really good book deals. Anyway, Smith Magazine is doing a really cool job of getting comics that are kind of, you know, true to life or explore the real issues of life. And not that, you know, a next door neighbor is, you know, an imperative story, you know, to have in your, you know, catalog. But I just knew I could cull together a bunch of different next door neighbor stories depending on, you know, who I contacted. And luckily, I've got a bunch in the can right now. I started early. Larry Smith, the publisher, was on board, really liked the idea. Jeff Newell, who's the comics editor, also agreed and helped me a lot with, you know, getting like some marketing, some hype. Actually, it was his idea to get Rick Veitch to draw the Picar story, because I had this Picar story and I reached out to Alison Bechdel.
Okay.
And I thought that would have been a great, you know, pair. Unfortunately, she's just too busy, so I was kind of scratching my head and trying to figure out next who to ask when Jeff Newell thought of Rick Veitch. And then I thought, my God, those guys have never worked together? That's like another no-brainer.
Absolutely.
Anyway,
no. Great
they
combination.
Did a nice little piece.
You bet.
You know, and I've got a bunch of folks coming up soon, and it's been a really cool little experiment. And you know, not every story is going to be, you know, insanely dramatic or crazy. It's going to, some of them are going to be subtle. Some are going to be, you know, you got to be kidding me, you know, like, but we're all going to relate to them in some way or another because we all have neighbors, and it's just people sharing their stories, and that's, and editing it gets to allow me to scratch that itch because I actually feel like I edit a lot of folks behind the scenes anyway. So I was using this also as an opportunity to publicly be editing so I can also have that in my, you know, that feather in my cap so
sure.
that in the future, you know, maybe I'll start to edit other projects that I want to make happen that I believe in. And I feel like this is just setting up that opportunity for the future.
Mr. Impresario. Very nice, man. No, it's cool. Honestly, man, I think that's great. And there are 8 stories right now up on the Smith website.
Right.
And it's smithmag.net. And actually, at the end of the show, I promise, I'll give all the URLs for where you can find all this cool stuff. Because, I mean, that's the really neat thing, Dean. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you. Because clearly, beyond Activate and your personal blog, you know, you're getting involved with Zuda and with Smith and all these other areas as well. So I wasn't a big digital comic guy until I started reading, you know, Immortal, quite frankly. I mean, that really was, no lie, man. That was one of the first things that I started checking out. And really, Zuda opened a door for me as well, and I got to meet Jeremy Love, who does Bayou for Zuda.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a wonderful guy. Met him in New York. And you're right. I mean, that's the thing. I think there's a lot going on here. And it's certainly, there have been really great online comics for years. I mean, you know, and I think, you know, I feel bad that I'm only coming to this now. But I think a lot of people are, and as we discussed in our abortive conversation, you know, this is the next wave. This is where everything's going, and it's not quite there yet as far as portability in the way that a magazine or a book is.
Right.
But it's going to get there, and we all know that it's eventually going to get there. So it's neat to see you guys experimenting in this platform, and you know, having this ability to step aside from the stores and have your work reach an audience this way.
Well, even with if you erase the bells and whistles of any format's virtue, whether it's something that's in print, we have to, you know, manually turn a page, or, you know, online, we actually have to click, or however, you know, you can wave a wand or whatever. Content story is the most important thing
of
all.
You bet.
And I think what you're responding to, which I started to respond to as well, because I, too, was a kind of webcomics naysayer because, you know, I was like, oh, comics, you know, they gotta be stapled together and in print. And, you know, it was the stories that eventually convinced me, oh, wait, that's right. It's just a different format. I love movies. I love songs. I love pictures, you know, and literature. And, you know, they all have different virtues in how they deliver a story. So I think what you're responding to is that, I think what started to happen that more really talented people who can convey a story were starting to use the format. And, you know, starting to convince the naysayers, okay, let's check out webcomics now. It's a whole other, you know, and at first it wasn't necessarily free. There was a lot of models that,
yes,
you know, suggested let's subscribe, let's pay.
Micropayments.
That may actually get to that point again. I mean, my greatest idea for how to pay for webcomics, you get Frank Miller to do his next Batman book, like Holy Terror or Holy War Batman or whatever.
Yeah.
You do that as a webcomic, as a subscription.
Yeah,
tell me that nobody would subscribe. Of course they would.
Have you seen,
you know?
Have you seen what they're doing with iTunes and Watchmen?
And that, the moving thing?
Yeah.
You know, I'm it's not my cuppa.
Okay.
It looks all right, but it's just not my cuppa. Because you know what? That's Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons' comic book.
Oh, I agree.
Sure, you can make a move and breathe and hair tingle. But, you know, I'd rather just see a movie version then.
No,
you know,
I agree with you.
I don't need a comic book to do that.
It's,
you know?
A buddy of mine at work, a radio guy, was all excited about it. And he's a former reader of comics. And he's, I think, with everything going on in mainstream, he's getting interested again. And
right.
And that's why he was really excited by it. But I think I'm going to have to turn him on to some good digital comics and let him see what's going on in Zuda and stuff like that. So maybe it's a good introduction to people, and maybe they'll, you know.
It might be. It just, like I said, I saw some of it actually today, 5 minutes of it. And, yeah, it's doing cool things. But
is it kind
of sacrilegious, but I prefer that form, that version of that story, which is the original version, let it be the book it was intended to be. You know?
Sure. Have you seen the did you see the trailer when you saw Dark Knight for the Watchmen movie?
Yeah, I saw the trailer online, then I saw Dark Knight, and you know, I dig it. Listen, I'm a what's his name, Zack Snyder.
That's right.
I'm a Zack Snyder fan.
Me too, man.
Dawn of the Dead was great. 300, I loved.
You
I
bet.
Cried.
Yeah, you bet.
A weirdo I am, but but yeah, no, I expect that he'll respect the story and he'll make a good movie. We have Watchmen the book.
You
can go and buy it right now. I don't expect that when I go see the movie, you know?
No, I agree. I agree, but I am rooting for a good Watchmen movie because
sure.
I just think it will only help. Just like a good The Road to Perdition film,
mm-hmm.
I think, helped the book. I really do think,
sure.
And I'm sure Max Collins would be the first guy to say the same thing.
Sure,
so,
sure,
you know. Well, let's, as we wrap up, because I appreciate your time, I did want to mention your children's story that's coming up from Toon
right.
Books.
I was contacted by Francoise Mallet, Art Spiegelman's wife. She's the art director of The New Yorker. She decided to start a new line of kids' books, but like really for kids, like 4 to 6 years old, maybe 8. A real starting point for kids, again, to read comics. You know, we don't have a lot of those anymore, and I think what's funny is that they were probably the folks like a decade ago or more is that comics aren't just for kids anymore, but now they're for kids again, you know?
Sure.
With this Toon Books line. So anyway, she contacted me. I was very flattered, and I was surprised because what she was contacting me for was to help create a story with collaborator and writer and underground cartoonist Jay Lynch to come up with something in the superhero vein that also told something of a little bit of an educational or moral story. And me and Jay figured out a pretty good idea and pitched it to her, to Francoise. She liked it a lot. And she was also working with schools in order to make sure that these stories worked for kids. And I wouldn't say focus group, but, you know, test audience by actual young children.
Oh, that's cool.
To make sure that our stories were clear for them to read and their peers. Anyway, so we came up with a pretty good idea, plotted it out, you know, created the comic. And I'm really excited because these things are beautiful. I don't know if you've seen any of the first wave, but they're beautifully packaged, beautifully designed. And I believe that they really do work for their intended audience.
That's terrific. I've heard Art talking about this project for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's great that they've moved forward with it and everything. And I'm looking now online at the link you sent me, and the art looks great.
Right.
I mean,
no,
yeah.
It definitely was fun, and my crisis of confidence was gee, I don't really feel like I'm a kid's book artist, but I definitely tried my best. And when I was done with the line work, I was like, all right, let me try to make sure this works in color. And it was one of my first real full color jobs that I played around with. And I think I nailed it. I did it.
It looks beautiful, man. It really does. I think it looks great. And so how are kids, do they buy in the bookstores, or is it like Scholastic books when we were kids where you could order them, you know, I mean, how, or?
I think that obviously, well, you know, with Amazon.com, you can get anything.
Sure,
I think,
sure.
That Francoise and company are been doing some signings at like Books of Wonder, which is a kind of a popular kids bookstore, at least in New York City. I don't know if it's a chain or not.
Okay, I know the store in New York though, but go ahead.
Right. And I think that, you know, she's doing interviews, she's spreading the word, she's working with schools and maybe libraries and really doing her best to get this line out there with the idea to do a lot more. You know, she's a mom, you know, and she's going to have kids who are going to be parents someday. And I think that's what happens as you get older is you start to, maybe you pull back on the curse words, you know, and maybe don't show everything. I don't know. I don't know what happens, you know, as you get older. And maybe this is a response to that. You know, maybe you're trying to make kids' books for yourself sometimes, you know?
Sure.
Who knows? I mean, that's what's weird about Billy Dogma for me is, as much as it can be raunchy and naughty, it also is really, like, morbidly cute at times that kind of even embarrasses me, you know? And gets kind of like, I don't know. I kind of throw everything in the kitchen sink into it, but I try to make it work without it becoming like acid jazz or something, you know?
No, there's a clear narrative line, so I wouldn't sweat that. I mean, and that's I think that's the fear that a lot of mainstream fans have about a lot of alt comics are like, holy shit, you know, I don't need a little acid trip, 22-page jazz.
Right.
I just want a story. That's the good news with Billy Dogma. There's always a story, and it's fun.
I mean, that to me is key, is story. Story first.
Absolutely, man. Well, listen, continued success. Good luck this weekend with the Eisners. I hope.
Thank you so much.
I hope you get a good call this weekend on that. And we will give the URLs as we wrap up. But I've taken enough of your time, Dean. I appreciate it. A great conversation.
Hey, thanks a lot, man.
Let's do it again soon.
Thank you.
Really great to have another chance to talk with Dean Haspiel. Dean has an interesting mainstream background that we went into in our first Word Balloon interview, and if you go back in the archives, you can find that conversation. But for now, I want you to focus on his current projects, and there's a lot of digital websites to go to here, so I want to go through the various URLs and point you in the right direction to check out some of this great stuff online. And as always, it's free. You've got the Billy Dogma Story Immortal, and that's available at the Activate website, which is act-i-vat.com/21.comic. His new current story for Billy Dogma, Fear My Dear, is at activate.com/22.comic. Then at zudacomics.com/street_code, that's where you'll find street code. And then the Next Door Neighbor series is at Smith Magazine, which is at smithmag.net/nextdoorneighbor. And finally, for a preview for his Toon Book stuff, Mo and Joe Fighting Together Forever with Jay Lynch, you can find that at toon-books.com. And I'll have all these URLs posted as well at the Word Balloon website and at the Libsyn archive as well, so you guys can find these things and check them out. And don't forget, too, coming out in print in the fall, in September, from Vertigo Comics, The Alcoholic with Jonathan Ames. Also, the X-Men First Class Halloween issue with Jeff Parker. That's coming up later in the fall as well. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks again for listening. John Sutras saying thanks. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, you can always reach me via email, john@wordballoon.com. Make sure you check out other Word Balloon episodes. We're at iTunes, at newsarama.com, our Comic Space, comicspace.com, and, of course, at wordballoon.com, where you'll find well over 100 interviews with various interesting creators of comics. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2008.